Hi, I'm Terry Griffith. I'm here with my co-host, Steve O'Getty, and we're Bark Radio.
Well, Bark Radio listeners, once again, we are in for a very pleasant visit today because one of our favorites is here, Ian Dunbar. Welcome.
Welcome.
Hi there. Good to chat with you both again.
Good to hear from you.
Terrific, man. And for those of you, you know, the two or three people who don't know who Ian Dunbar is, he is the father of positive dog training. He is the man. He's out in the Bay Area. And we're going to talk to begin with Ian today about January, which is Train Your Dog Month. Ian, tell the folks about it.
Well, it's the second year that it's the APDT, Association of Pet Dog Trainers, Train Your Dog Month, when, you know, all trainers try their best to try and, you know, let people know that, that training is not just worthwhile, but it's fun. And it's a quality of life issue for the dog, that it's really difficult for dogs living with people if people don't explain what the house rules are. You know, the dog ends up breaking rules he didn't know existed. And then also January is it's the third anniversary of Shelter Dog Prevention Month. And of course, the notion here is that all shelter dogs were once puppies. I mean, that's where shelter dogs have come from. And especially where I am in California, this is puppy season. And, I mean, it is crazy. I can't explain how many puppies we have in class in the months of January and then February. I mean, it's triple most other months. Yeah, and sadly what happens is, you know, people will get a puppy and they don't check that the breeder has started the house training process and started the chew toy training process and has had many, many people to handle and socialize and train the dogs. And so they're behind before they start at 8 weeks of age. You know, that early experience is so unbelievably critical because puppies are very, very impressionable when they're young. And so any socialization and training that you do then has 100 times the influence than, say, if you did it at 5 or 6 months. And then when they get home, they don't know what to do, and heaven forbid they let the puppy, they give him too much freedom, and he makes house-soling mistakes and chewing mistakes, and he learns to bark, that this will quickly, this will quickly become the status quo. And, you know, and by the time the puppy gets to be 5 or 6 months old, the owners are getting fed up with him. And it's also sad. It's so predictable and it's so preventable. And it's why on dogstardaily.com that we provide all this free information. You know, people can download my books for free, you know, before you get your puppy, after you get your puppy. And we tell them, you know, please raise the puppies like this so that they get a first chance. You know, everyone talks about a dog deserves a second chance. I want puppies to get a good first chance, to get a good education.
So they stay in their homes.
Yeah.
So they stay in their original homes, absolutely, yes.
And there's that slippery slope thing that I've read in. It's the thing about the puppy starts with maybe some of the things that you described, chewing the wrong things, having toileting accidents in the house, that sort of thing. And then they move the puppy to the garage, or they throw the puppy out in the backyard, and everything just is exacerbated from there. It just gets worse.
Yes, I call this my ranch in Sonoma speech, and it basically goes that the puppy is given too much freedom, too little guidance in the house, so he makes these little mistakes. So then the owner puts him in the yard, where, of course, he becomes an indiscriminate urinator, chewer. He learns to bark and dig. Then the neighbors complain of the barking, so he goes in the garage, which he destroys. And soon they can't catch the dog because he's in the yard. He's desocializing. He plays catch me if you can, and then he may, say, nip at the kids who are trying to put him in the garage. And eventually the dog ends up in the shelter. What they used to say, you know, in puppy classes years ago is, oh, we found him a home with an elderly couple who have more time, and they have a ranch in Sonoma County. And it's like, oh, yeah, right. I mean, this ranch in Sonoma County is basically the animal shelter and probably heaven. And it's just not fair for puppies that they don't get this first start in life. That it really, when you look at the things we're trying to do in dogs, I must admit, it is tricky to train a dog to be friendly with all other dogs, especially if you have a boy dog, and especially if he has his ghoulies on. You know, it does take some time, you know, a lot of classical conditioning. You've got to walk him every day. You've got to go to the dog park every day, and then you'll get there. But to train a dog, to teach him household rules is simple. And to socialize a dog so that he's friendly with people is absolutely easy. It's as easy as it is enjoyable. And all it takes is when you have a puppy, 4 nights a week, you need at least 8 people to come round, you know, watch football on the telly, to eat chocolate and ice cream, whatever it is, and they handle, they cuddle, they play with, and they train the puppy. And by the time that puppy is 3 months old, he just says, I love people. It wouldn't even enter into the dog's head to bite people because he loves them. And that's how easy it is. Puppy time is party time, and then you end up with an adult dog that loves people. So that's very easy to do, and it's inexcusable that people raise dogs that end up being fearful of people or aggressive towards them. It's a crying shame. And, of course, the dog always gets the blame.
Exactly. It's always the dog's fault in their mind, and that drives me crazy. We've talked about that on the show many times. The problem, and to your point, is so easy to fix, and such a little bit of effort can make such a big difference, and people don't get it.
No, I think people, we have to dispel this notion that some people think, oh, if I get a purebred dog, he will be perfect. Other people say, if I get a mixed breed dog, he will be perfect. You know, and the point is, any dog, no matter what its breed, no matter what its breeding, can be a super friendly, trustworthy, dependable companion, or it can be a dog that is fearful of people or aggressive towards them. It all depends on the puppy's early socialization. And I guess the aggression to people thing is what really gets to me, because it is so easy. I mean, I can understand people having problems when their dog, say, at 6 months, becomes on-leash aggressive to other dogs. I mean, that is a tricky problem, and you really do need help from a dog trainer. But you do not need help to socialize a puppy. All you got to do is have a party in your home and you know, and then start walking him. It really is so easy, and the benefits are enormous, enormous. I can't explain it. It's like we were talking about before we came on the air about my seminar season last year, and I was on the road for 8 weeks, and it really tired me out, you know. I'll tell you, I did come back on some Tuesdays, you know, to catch up and get ready for the next trip. But I have been doing dog walk therapy, and I'm being serious. I have totally changed the way I live with my dogs, and I have added in about an hour and a half in the morning where I slowly walk my old dog, the oldest one. He's about 12 or 14. Mm-hmm. We don't know his age. And I just walk around the block, and he sniffs a lot. I stop. And I think, this is the most wonderful time of my life. And I thought, and we meet other dogs, and I say, oh, he's totally fine with little dogs. It's so nice to be able to walk a dog that I know is friendly to every person and every dog, and people talk to me. And for people to miss that, it's like, apart from snuggling up with the dog on the couch in the evenings in front of the fire like I was doing last night, I mean, this is why we have dogs, right? You know, if we walk the streets on our own, no one says hello, at least where I live. They all walk by, you know. But when I have my dog, everyone smiles or says something. And you know, it's such a shame that we miss out on that.
It's so true, and it's what, you know, I encourage everybody with a dog to do the same thing. Get your dogs out in the world. The Richmond area is just a huge, crazy dog community, and I get mine out everywhere I can. Terry does the same thing. And it's just like in your neighborhood. You know, you have the dog with you, and all of a sudden, like, we go to our local Bass Pro store a lot with the dogs because it's a dog-friendly store, and it's a fabulous place to hang out with dogs. And we do what's called shopper's therapy. People come up and go, oh, can I pet your dog? And if you're doing that during the Christmas season, it's just a hoot because you walk 3 paces and somebody else is petting your dog. And it's wonderful for them. They're seeing, in my case, large breed dogs out in public who are well-behaved. And it's great for our dogs. You know, it's a blast.
Yeah, it's oh, I do hope there's a lot of puppy owners out there who are listening. I really do. That it's It's very interesting, and we were actually recording some, you know, iWoof's programs for Dogstar Daily yesterday, and Kelly raised the question, as my wife, it's like, why is adopting a dog from a shelter so much more sort of sexy than preventing the dog getting into the shelter? And, you know, we don't think about broadcasting these prevention programs with puppies. And my view is that new puppy owners are getting cheated by dog professions. We are not, I think, doing our job. I mean, present company accepted, who are trying to spread the word. But we can't blame pet owners. They're doing their best. They go online. They get a book. But it's not shouting out to them, you've got your puppy now for the next month. Man, you are going to be so busy, having so much fun socializing and training this puppy. And we've got to let people know not just how important it is, but how incredibly urgent it is.
And why?
It's that
big why. I think that preventing shelter dogs is huge, Ian, and I really hadn't honed in on that. But we're going to start shouting that to people, too. That's just...
Thank you.
Huge.
Yeah, because, you know, once you get to, you know, both Kelly mainly and myself, we do a lot of shelter work, and it takes so much time. When you have an 8-month-old or a 2-year-old dog that's got some behavioral baggage, just simple things like he's no longer house-trained. It takes so much longer than house-training a puppy. But the big problems, of course, are... the, you know, sort of hyperactivity that the dog is, he's bouncing and he's barking, and the fearfulness. This is the killer, that if dogs are fearful, as a puppy, you can turn them around in a couple of days. As an adult dog, it's going to take you months and maybe years. And
right.
This is the sadness, because that dog is in pain. If a dog is fearful of people, people don't think about this. We force that dog to face his biggest fear every day we walk him, or every day people come to the house. And that, to me, is it's not right. We have to thoroughly prepare puppies to live with people. People are difficult to live with, I'll tell you.
I'm going to quote
That's
you
for
on
sure.
that. I like that, yes. But it's true, Ian. And I'm really glad to be talking about this and just kind of gaining – additional or just re-upping my perspective on all of this, because that is the whole socialization thing is so huge. And when you walk into a person's home to do in-home training and you see a dog with fear, it's just the saddest thing in the world, and it can be prevented. You're right.
Yeah, and, you know, if you have a fearful adult dog, there's so many things that dog professionals can't do. A groomer can't groom him. A veterinarian can't treat him. A trainer can't train him. If the
right.
dog's fearful, it's all pervasive. And, you know, and you've got to deal with that first. And it really takes a lot of time, you know, once a dog is adult and fearful. But they don't see it happening, you see. It's like it goes like this. And hopefully there'll be a lot of people with puppy owners out there. It's, you know, young puppies are outward going. They look like Mr. Sociable. You go to puppy class, he's outward going. What you've got to look for is someone comes up to your dog and they reach to pet him and the dog ducks his head or backs up or goes and hides behind your legs. That's the beginning of it. And within a few months, the dog will be snapping at people. You've got to look for these little signs that the dog does not run up to people and sit to greet them. You know, if ever a dog is slow to come, the first thing I think of is, well, maybe he doesn't want to come, maybe he's got other interests, or maybe it's the fact he doesn't want to approach this person. It's always in the back of my mind, you know, that proximity and approach really tell you everything about how a dog is feeling about people.
You're right. And the thing that's so great for those young puppies, when you see that sort of thing, if they're in the right class, if the owner's working with the right trainer or whatever, like you said, that's easily fixable when they're babies, but not
absolutely.
Late. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I mean, oh, good Lord. I mean, some puppy problems are as easy to fix as, it's as easy as falling off a log. I mean, it really is. It's almost a non-problem, but it has to be done. And people will look at a puppy and say, oh, he's a bit shy. Oh, man, you should be ringing an alarm bell.
Mm-hmm.
If he's shy at 8 weeks, oh, good Lord. You know, puppies should not be shy. They should be universally friendly and approaching at 8 weeks. And so whenever you think a dog's a little shy, a little standoffish, a little slow to approach, let's do some stuff quickly. And what do? Simple. We stop feeding him out of a bowl, and now we invite people around to hand-feed him.
Yep.
I mean, I just this week I dealt with a case of a it was actually a friend of mine who's in the pet professions, and his dog doesn't like his granddaughter. So I gave him advice on the phone, and then I went to see the dog 2 days later. He said, well, it's almost fixed. The little girl's been hand-feeding the dog. She's been training it. She's 4 years old. Now the dog loves her. It's that easy, you know, because the dog thinks, well, you know, I like little girls that they not only do they feed me my kibble, but they add in a few treats, too.
Right.
And it really does work well, because I have personal experience with that. Both my dogs are rescues, and coming into the house, that's how I fed them. That's they was one piece at a time coming from us, coming from other folks. And one was a much older dog when we got him, and a little bit crazy, but not fearful, just high energy. And the quickness in which he started to come around and be receptive was amazing, and I contributed to that very process. I mean, there's a point there where they're saying, okay, well, people are cool. Look at the food I'm getting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember once I was coming back from Chicago, and the plane was landing in Oakland. And I normally don't talk to people on planes, because once they find out I'm a doggy person, they say, oh, yeah, my wife's got a dog. I mean, she's really a cat person, but she decided to get a dog. And I remember she got it on a Tuesday. No, actually, it was a Wednesday, because we picked up the kids from ballet. No, it was karate. It was Tuesday. It goes on and on like this, you know, telling me their stories. So I don't normally say I'm a veterinarian or a dog, you know, doggy behaviorist or what have you. But right when we landed, this man sitting next to me turned. He said, I'm sorry, I'm so excited, I'm going to pick up my new puppy. And I thought, oh my word, how can I not say something, you know? And I thought, what advice can I give him in the 3 minutes it takes for us to taxi to the gate? And I thought about it, and what I said was, you know, the most important tip I can give you is don't feed your puppy from a food bowl. That the giving of a food bowl to a dog is done in adulthood, and what it says is, you're a big boy now, you're grown up, you are friendly, you are well-mannered, and you now deserve to eat your own food bowl. Instead, hand-feed the dog his food, have people around to hand-feed the dog, socialization, have people train the dog using the food as a lure, come here, sit, lie down, roll over, and the rest of the food, moisten it, stuff it into chew toys and give it to the dog, and this will reward the dog for lying down quietly and calmly. So it was really interesting that the one piece of advice I gave him was, don't feed your dog from a food bowl. What mm-hmm. a waste of potential lures and rewards.
You're absolutely right. I had a little, 16-week-old pup for a couple days at my house, and that's actually what we did. He has like sort of the attention span of a gnat. And so we just did the hand feeding thing, you know, morning and evening. And it's like, see, bud, you really can focus. You can do that sit stay. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can use that in so many ways. And I have. And I just love hand feeding. It's marvelous.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
It really is. And it's I've always had big dogs until. We got our French bulldog, and now actually we're fostering a little Sholo, a little Mexican hairless dog.
Wow.
He is tiny. But I've always had big dogs, and I always hand-feed them something, you know, every day, and I hide the food, like, between my thumb and fingers just to check the dog's bite, to check that he has a soft bite.
Oh, I like
it was the first.
That.
It was the first thing I did with this dog when I saw him. You know, the dog that didn't like the little girl. I hand fed him, and I said, "Oh, wow, this dog has a beautiful, soft mouth." And that, of course, is always the last line of defense. If you do frighten a dog or hurt him, and he does lunge and nip, Well, he doesn't hurt you because he's got bite inhibition. So the dog may react, but he doesn't do any harm. And so the problem is very easily resolvable. And so hand feeding has so many benefits. As I say, it's the most important advice I could ever give to a puppy owner or a dog owner.
I think it's great advice for everyone listening to this. It's wonderful, Ian. Okay, so do we need to – I think we need to talk about what's coming in 2011.
Right, you've got a very busy schedule, it looks like, from your website.
Wow, yes. I just put it on Facebook. I just scheduled all the stuff for the year. I've got – what have I got? Belgium, workshop in France, two lectures in Canada, Japan – Russia, where I've never been before, Chile, going back to Chile, and Mexico. And then I have...
the U.S.
And the U.S., I have 12 seminars. Most of them are the one that you guys came to in Richmond, the science-based dog training with feeling. And it's basically bringing some science back to dog training, but also making it more of a relationship thing. That the dog's meant to be our buddy, you know. He's not our adversary in the training arena. So it's showing people how when you use your voice, basically the dog can learn much quicker. You can give better instructions and you can give much better feedback. Mm-hmm. And then two of the seminars, where are they? Chicago and
Albany.
Albany, yes. These are four-day academies, which are really for dog professionals, where we talk about the serious way that I started puppy classes at 29 years ago now, and we've always taught them off-leash, and I realized that a lot of people aren't doing that, and they're really wasting the opportunity of having a puppy class where you can have them all off-leash, which means, of course, they will be handled by the 24 people in the room. And so I thought, I'm going to do an academy where I just describe, and I'll show videos of how we teach puppy classes, puppy one, puppy two, how we teach adult classes, how we promote, how we, conduct the business. And I just wanted to share it, basically, that I thought that, a lot of people who live, well, you said it yourself, on the East Coast, they don't get the chance to see our classes. I mean, this week we have three visitors, two from Japan, who are going to visit, about 12 different classes. But if you're not in the San Francisco Bay Area, that's very difficult to do. So that's it, 12 seminars in the U.S., and I just finished scheduling them yesterday, and I'm now working on 2012, which is going to be even more exciting.
You are very, very busy.
Well,
but
yeah,
I'm going to be, I think, 65 in 2012. So
what?
I'm doing a lot of fun stuff, and I'm going to do a big tour in New Zealand, Australia, and then go to Thailand for a holiday, and I'm taking all of April off to be in the Caribbean somewhere. So it's been a lot of fun seminars I'll be giving.
Wow.
Sounds awesome.
I think 2012 is going to be a great year for you, Ian.
Well, this will be good too. 2011. I'll be in England in April, which my birthday is tax day, and I'm doing a birthday lecture, and it'll be in close to London, and I'm doing it for a friend of mine who's the editor of Dogs Today magazine, and it's going to be a party. So the lecture is going to be, it's going to be party time.
That's wonderful. Well, have a blast with that.
I most certainly will.
And Terry and I hope to see you in Albany for
well,
the Serious Puppy Academy.
We'll have another tweet up, and we'll do another couple of interviews when I'm there, I hope.
Absolutely.
That sounds like a plan.
Well, Ian, thank you so much for sharing so much about puppies in this particular interview, because it's critical information for all those puppy owners out there. We'll try to get it pushed out to as many folks as we can.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me. You, the two of you are my favorite hosts, so I'm always willing to come on Bart Radio.
Thanks, Ian.
Okay, bye-bye.